Welcome to the podcast with a K from Casturbis. I haven't called it that for a while. I'm Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean. Hi, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, thank you.
Good. Are you in the toilet, or it's very echoey?
No, I'm in a room. It's very big. It's. I don't know what to say. You've embarrassed me.
I'm so sorry. Don't forget to flush. Only joking. So James is with me at the moment, and then a little bit later in the show, he will be replaced. He will be substituted. He will be degenerated into someone else, yes. Perhaps. Yes. We'll see how that goes. The BBC has confirmed when The Power of the Doctor will air on BBC One, and it is pretty much when we said it would be last week. And I can't claim any insider knowledge there, because I got the information from Philip Bates of the Doctor Who Companion. Hi, Philip. He'll be on in a few weeks' time, actually, to discuss a book that he's been working on with another guest. So I've been looking forward to that for a long time, but the book is now finished. Back to The Power of the Doctor. It is going to land on your TV screens at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday the 23rd of October. That is a week from when we're recording this. Obviously, you may not watch it live. You may be watching it on BBC iPlayer, if you prefer. But if you have children, it's on until 9 p.m, so that's quite a bit of a stay-up for them on a night before school. Listen to the mum with three children there weighing up the practicalities of this. So, yeah, that's it. It's going to be on soon, then, which marks the end of the Chris Chibnall era of Doctor Who, James.
Yes, it does.
Are we excited about that? Are we excited for a new era? Do we feel... I mean, there's probably an entirely different podcast as to the Chibnall era of Doctor Who, but by the end of it, are we feeling that it's pretty much, well, that's it? Or are we? Do we have a meh about it? Is it years of missed opportunities? What is it?
I think it's a shame. I'm just listening to myself echo and enjoying it. I think it's a shame in the sense that I kind of felt like the Flux, I think, was quite innovative, while controversial, the Timeless Child showed that was trying to do different things. The Sea Devil episode wasn't particularly good, but I was kind of finding the era was surprising me a bit. I wasn't quite sure what it was going to do. I wasn't expecting the Ruth Doctor when that occurred. You know, I don't think I'm happy that it's ended. I'm not unhappy either, because change is always interesting. Yeah, but essentially, I think that there was legs there. I think there were opportunities to move forward, but, you know, a new era is always good for a show, isn't it? It refreshes and revitalizes. So I am not disappointed or excited. I accept it for what it is. But yeah, I think controversially, I think that there was still legs in it. I think it was doing some different stuff. But then remember, Carmel's era at the time was getting quite a lot of flack from fans.
Yes.
Even though retrospectively, yeah, we now look back and go, look at what it was doing. It was, you know, resisting. It was defying our expectations of Doctor Who, and it led to a very fresh and controversial series of books that followed it, and then, as we've said before, paved the way to the new era. So I think it'll be interesting to see what people say about it in 5-6 years' time.
Yeah, yes, it certainly will. The synopsis for The Power of the Doctor. The 13th Doctor must fight for her very existence against her deadliest enemies, the Daleks, the Cybermen, and her arch-nemesis, the Master, who is attacking a speeding bullet train on the edges of a distant galaxy. Why are seismologists going missing from 21st century Earth? Who is defacing some of history's most iconic paintings? Why is a Dalek trying to make contact with a Doctor? And just what hold does the mesmeric Rasputin have over Tsar Nicholas in 1916... Russia. I've got to be honest with you, that last line, I'm amazed it's taken any Doctor Who producer, writer, this long to do a Rasputin and Tsar Nicholas story, especially given, younger fans may not know this, but our fans probably will, Tom Baker played Rasputin in Nicholas and Alexandra back in 1970, 71, that sort of time. I know my mum and dad went to see it on a date, that's how long ago it was.
I find it interesting how finales for Doctor Who still carry a bit of the kind of like the Saturday BBC One sort of variety entertainment vibe that it just throws everything in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's not like it's, you don't tell a coherent story with a finale for Doctor Who. You just try and make it as crazy and with so many elements as possible, which feels a bit sort of 1980s about it. You know, Morecambe and Wise will pop on, and then, well, Russ Abbott would need wrong channel, but you know what I mean? And
wrong Les Dawson would be. But yes, there. I'm with you. Yeah. Noel's House Party
Bruce
in the 90s.
Forsyth. Yeah. I meant these sort of like these sort of staples of BBC would often come together on a Saturday night in various different formations, and Noel's House Party being, as you say, one of them. Kind of has that vibe. It's like it's just all about individual things going on, and rather than how they all sort of coalesce.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it will be interesting to see how that. I mean, it does look when you like a speeding bullet train on a distant galaxy, seismologists, iconic paintings, a Dalek, Rasputin. I mean, there could be like individual stories, which may be, you know, a good reason why it's 90 minutes long. I do hope, and I do believe I'm probably going to be disappointed in this, I do hope there isn't some endlessly cloying goodbye scene with anyone. I don't care. I just don't want one. But we're probably going to get one.
If you've watched the trailer, I would advise everyone to, well, I don't know, I feel like I'm being a bit cruel, but at the timestamp of 41 seconds, there's just a really fascinating freeze of Sophie Aldred as Ace, and I just can't stop looking at it.
Is that the parachute bit?
It's a parachute bit. If you freeze on 41 seconds, it's just, I don't know. It's
bad?
It's just unusual. It's just weird. Yeah. It's not bad. It's just, once you see it, you'll never unsee it again. But,
yes.
At the same time, I've got to say, it's kind of cool to see her in her outfit doing something actiony, which is what Ace always used to do. It really does feel like a callback to the past.
Yeah, Sophie Aldred was one of those people, really, who you kind of feel maybe should have had an opportunity to do something in Doctor Who a few years ago, back in Doctor Who, not sort of 33 years after she left, essentially.
But I think what's cool with her, and it's a bit like K-9, is that when other people have come back, like Sarah Jane or even Joe Grant, they don't sort of have that visual emblematic thing going on. But with Ace, it's like a superhero, isn't it? You expect the jacket, you kind of hope for the baseball bat. And it's really weird to see that sort of visual thing of that person, that character, actually being back. Because I suppose the only time we've really ever had that was Peter Davison in Time Crash. You know, from that sort of distance in you know, full outfit. So, yeah, I'm really excited about that. So, yeah, the freeze frame is a weird shot, but it's great to see her back.
Yeah. It makes more sense to me than Tegan, I suppose. But, it's just happening, isn't it? So I've long since given up on trying to understand any kind of consistency within Doctor Who. There just isn't any. But, you know, there isn't with most things, so it's not a big deal, is it?
Yep.
Go on.
I was just going to offer a third yep, and then I thought, do I give third yep? Is it really worth it? Does it add anything? Does that affirmation help you? Does it move the podcast along? No, it doesn't. It just probably makes it stop.
Actually, it probably does help me move the podcast along a little bit. If you missed Jodie Whittaker's swan song in Doctor Who, don't worry, because the 2022 Doctor Who specials will be released as a Steelbook Blu-ray. So that would be last year's, or I suppose this year's New Year's Eve a New Year's Day special, Eve of the Daleks. I'll get the words in the right order in a moment. Then Legend of the Sea Devils, and then The Power of the Doctor. Now, as things stand at the moment, obviously the order of watching there is Eve of the Daleks, The Power of the Doctor, and Legend of the Sea Devils. And we haven't even seen The Power of the Doctor yet, so whether that order will change or not is anyone's guess. But that steelbook is going to be available from the 7th of November, so about 2 weeks and a day after the episode airs. So that's not bad for a DVD turnaround. You remember when we used to wait months for DVDs of things to come out, and now they're out a few days later, or, you know, the movie's in the cinema, you've got to wait ages for it to be on DVD. Oh no, here it is, it's popping up on Disney Plus a few weeks later. Going to the cinema, were you? Don't bother. So, I kind of, that aspect of modern things kind of entertains me and baffles me somewhat. I kind of liked that time when there was a big delay between, you know, GoldenEye, the movie, 1995, and then the DVD came out 6 months later, and I waited and I saved up for it and I bought it, and I got a special edition with a pen that doesn't explode, and a CD of Tina Turner, and an issue of the 007 fan club magazine, and it wasn't even on DVD, it was on VHS, actually, now I think about it. But, you know, I waited all that time for it, and it felt like it was exciting, and getting it was like the movie coming out again. But these days, you know, a good example would be Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, I think, or am I thinking of the Thor movie? No, the Thor movie, yeah, which appeared, the new Thor, Love and Thunder, which was in the cinemas during the summer and then appeared in Disney Plus at the end of the summer. Just a few weeks later, there's no build-up for it. There's no excitement. There's no tangible thing at the end. There's just a thing that beams into your eyes. It's not the same, is it?
Oh, I mean, I didn't get the opportunity to see it in the cinema, and I'd like to have seen it. So I was kind of pleased it appeared just a few weeks later before it was entirely spoiled. So I suppose it depends on how you look at it, but I do understand what you mean.
Yeah,
I understand that.
I guess this is why I'm a big fan of retro games, I suppose, because you get a box. And even with, you know, new releases of retro games, you get a box. I've got an Evercade. I've got three Evercades. That's another conversation entirely. And they released all these old games in cartridges in physical boxes, like that you have to crack open. And then they have an instruction booklet for each of the games that are on the cartridge. It's just nice to have that physical connection with the things that you're going to play. So, I mean, I'm probably not going to get the steelbook anytime soon, but it's nice that it's going to be there. My children and my nieces have a very odd relationship with Doctor Who at the moment. So my nieces grew up through the back end of David Tennant and all the way through Matt Smith, and then sort of went a wandering when Peter Capaldi came along. And they haven't really come back with Jodie Whittaker. They watched a couple of episodes and that was it. Erin Rose doesn't really like Doctor Who. And Bruce, my son, the eldest by a couple of minutes, he's more of a... He'd quite like The Flux. He didn't like Jodie's first series at all, though. He nearly went off it entirely.
Do you think... Because it's interesting that, you know, a few people sort of disappeared around Capaldi. And I kind of feel that was a time when streaming started to become far bigger.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's some correlation between that sort of, not saying that it's, you know, I'm just saying that, you know, the amount of content that was out balanced out with something which you might be sort of getting a little tired with, because by that point, you know, almost 10 years old, around coming up to 10 years old. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of a point where you're going, well, I'll watch something else? In a sense, I know a lot of people like to go, well, you know, Capaldi or Jodie is because it's rubbish and they stopped watching it. But is it also a little bit of like the lack of sparkle because it's not so new anymore? Yeah. Plus, there is so much to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I feel, and bouncing off what you said earlier, if those episodes had been available as entire seasons to binge watch at the time when people were starting to binge watch things, I think they'd have a different reputation. I think there'd be more people still with the show now.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. So it'll be interesting again if they do move, you know, with the rumours of Disney sort of looking at becoming a sort of global distributor, those things that was talked about a few months ago.
Yeah.
That would be good for the show, I think.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah.
But But very, very different. Very different times are ahead of us, ladies and gentlemen. We don't even know for definite what face we're going to see at the end of The Power of the Doctor. And we also don't actually know, because there's a bit of a rumour that there's a Christmas special, isn't there? Have you heard this rumour?
No, I've not.
Yes, there is a rumour that that is a happening thing. So that's kind of... I mean, obviously we'll know more about it at the end of the episode, I suppose. I don't imagine we'll find out beforehand. But if there is another episode of Doctor Who this year, that will be a surprise. Indeed. Okay, and we reached the part of the podcast now, dear listener, where I get to tell you what's coming up on Casterbris over the next few months. So first of all, we've got an interview with the Flim Flam Man, and he will be directing traffic through the gates of Eternia, probably sometime around what we call Christmas, but what they know as Ovington time. So that's coming along, and I'm quite excited about that, because it's been a bit of a slapdash hammer blow to me to find that we're actually in completely different time streams. So actually aligning those time streams with the benefit of a frequency pulsation modulator. That will be pretty exciting to do. We've got that scheduled for next Thursington. So should that happen, we'll be bring that along to your eardrums with laser precisionness. Also coming up on the Casterbris podcast in a few weeks' time will be Philip Bates and Colin Howard. Colin Howard's art graced the covers of around 30 Doctor Who VHS releases, and for the first time ever, these are collected together in time slides. Now, I know Philip's been working on this with Colin for quite some time, and so I was delighted to learn that the book is finished. So we will be speaking to certainly Philip and hopefully Colin Howard as well in a few weeks' time on this podcast. For those of you listening who don't know this, our very first Casterbris podcast was released in 2007. These were sporadic, whimsical, slightly silly releases at times, featuring interviews, for example, with the man who denied that Daleks could fly, and they were regularly interrupted by our slithering butler, Gerald. There he is. So, with that in mind, we have now recorded over 400 Casterbris podcasts. There are also a few other podcasts that we've done here and there. James McLean did a few others. There are a couple of prop casts, but I think they've been folded into the Casterbris podcast proper. There's also the Beyond Casterbris podcast, which will probably be kept separate, and Coaxial, which is a short-lived podcast I did with Gareth Cavanagh. Now, the reason I mention this is that although we've done over 400, probably only about half of them are actually available to listen to online. The other half are all archived. We know where they are, and I get them uploaded and fixed and polished, and I improve the sound quality and so on for you from time to time. But that's quite hard work. So occasionally they do appear, and with or without the media. And, for instance, on Twitter they appear, and they sound like interesting podcasts sometimes, but there's no media there. Other times they have very, what shall we say, topical titles that are obviously completely out of date now. So if you do come across any of those, please do let me know, because I am trying to work through them all. But as I say, we're talking at least 200 podcasts to fix not just the audio on, but also a few other things as well, such as the images and the description. Gareth Cavanagh, how are you?
I'm very well. And you know, I'm sat here in the garden, in blazing sunshine. It's like it's May again. It's really weird. But then it goes horrible tomorrow, and we're plunged into a winter of darkness.
So oh, is that tomorrow? Enjoying, oh dear.
I think so. Yes, and I'm of course enjoying my last moments of sunlight with you.
Well, it's it sounds both poetic, and romantic, tragic. And tragic, all in one. I didn't know the weather was going to turn tomorrow. I have jobs to do. God, no. Oh, dear.
Get the sou'wester out.
Yeah.
Happy times.
I need to rearrange my shed office, and that means taking things outside. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. We don't need this. It's Gareth Cavanagh. We haven't had you on the Cast Sturbus podcast. Oh, we are recording, by the way. Just so you're on.
Hi.
We haven't had you on the show.
You had your telephone voice on.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah. We haven't had you on the show for ages. So, and I know you've been busy, but before we go into being busy, I was talking to James McLean a little earlier in this show, before he degenerated into you, about the upcoming Doctor Who episode, The Power of the Doctor. Which is basically, it's on in 10 days' time after we record this. Today's the 13th. It's on the 23rd of October.
It's sort of crept up, hasn't it?
It has, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You
know, now we only get one bit of Doctor Who a year. You'd expect it to be more special, and it feels less special, bizarrely, because all the things that I enjoyed from the last one I watched, which, you know, I can't remember. What was the last one we watched?
The last one was the Sea Devils one.
Oh, was that Easter?
Yeah, and then before that it was Eve of the Daleks.
Now, I like the Dalek one in the storage place.
Yeah.
God, I sat 800. But yeah, the Sea Devil one didn't do much for me. So I guess it is difficult to retain that excitement. But I have watched the trailer.
It's a collection of strange scenes, the trailer, isn't it? Strange little clips.
It's a bit like someone has chopped up Day of the... Oh, God. What was the 50th anniversary one? Was it Day of the Doctor?
Day of the Doctor, yeah.
Okay, it's like they chopped up bits of that with bits of some of the unit ones with bits of the Master who seems to be in, you know, it felt like a kind of mashup of the other ones. I have no idea what it's about. I couldn't tell you. It's some MacGuffin about seismology and paintings, and is that Skaro turning up to attack Earth?
Attack the Earth,
end of time. Don't know.
It would seem to be. But obviously, we don't know. We don't know. I was looking at it and I was thinking, I mean, trailers are never going to tell you what's going to happen usually. But it did feel as though someone had just ripped out a few pages and based of the script and jumbled them up and then based the trailer around that.
It's not a very effective trailer. Now, out of fairness, I thought, well, the nearest thing to this I can think of in regeneration terms is The End of Time, because Smith goes at Christmas, so that had a kind of Christmas vibe. And did Capaldi go at Christmas? I think Capaldi went
at Christmas.
That's a strangely Christmas vibe. So in terms of it being a non-Christmas regeneration, even though The End of Time was kind of at Christmas, it didn't feel like Christmas. And it wasn't promoted as Christmas. I thought I'll go back and look at the trailer. And the trailer is remarkably similar to The End of Time, but I did get a better sense of what was going on in it, I have to say. I watched that and I thought, yes, that is how I remember it, and that is the show that I watched. So it seems better and clearer as a trailer. And their big MacGuffin was, you know, he will not fall time, but, you know, was quite clever.
Yeah.
No idea. I'll watch it. Weird to see Tegan back.
That feels
strange. I'm told it's because it's Chibnall's favourite companion of all time, so I guess this has been flexing his showrunner muscles and said, you know, oh, I want Tegan back. Really? Yeah, Tegan. But Ace feels a lot more, you know, because obviously that character's been consistently built up. I mean, Tegan just vanished, didn't she?
She did, yeah.
Walked off walked off at the end of Resurrection of the Daleks, and even in Doctor Who fiction, she hasn't really shown up until the Big Finish stuff, and even that was just every now and again. So it's a weird turn. It's a strange left field turn. God knows how it'll work. But yeah, more excited about Sophie coming back as Ace, because that character has been built up.
Yeah, it's James and I were saying earlier in the podcast, the Tegan thing does seem a little bit strange, but as you point out, there is reason for it. But aside from that, I also mentioned that it's a strange that it's taken so long for any Doctor writer or producer to get Sophie Aldred back on the show.
Well, I think it's been talked about over the years for a while, but I think it's only when those trailers for the Blu-ray box set turned up, done by the excellent, you know, Pete McTighe, that I think people thought, actually, there's, and I'm guessing that is forming the backstory, because it very much looks like business suited running the Ace Foundation, Ace, which I thought was quite, it was good. It was a neat bit of writing, that little 2-minute trailer. It's not an easy task, but I'm guessing that it's all in there.
So, well, that's Doctor Who, what's coming up with Doctor Who, and we'll be getting together, no doubt, in the future, and casting our minds back over the Jodie Whittaker era and the Chris Chibnall era. But, and before we move on to what you've been up to, I just wanted to get a ballpark opinion. I asked James the same question earlier. What is our, at this point, because it could be different in 5 years' time, but what is our lasting impression of Chris Chibnall's Doctor Who? Is it meh? Is it could have been better? Is it actually that was really good? Is it, what is it? Where does it sit? How do you feel about it now at this point, coming to the end?
I think if you ask me honestly, I would say that there's some things he does very well. Now, bizarrely, he seems to do Dalek stories particularly well, because he seems to do something new and interesting, which isn't ridiculous, but is refreshing. So Daleks, big, big tick.
Yeah.
I like what he's done with the Master. And his Cybermen stories have been okay. I think probably the things that he hasn't got right is the Companions have been, by and large, quite boring. And, you know, I mean, Bradley is a fine actor, but he's just Bradley. John Bishop is not a fine actor and is just John Bishop.
Yes.
And the rest of the, the rest of the Companions just don't feel memorable. I don't think there's much about them that stands out. So I would say, in comparison with Russell's Companions, in comparison with Capaldi's Companions, with Moffat's Companions on the whole, I'd say that's weaker in his game. I think his first season is a worthy misfire, because he completely ignores, which, you know, might be seen as a very brave and noble fan-pleasing decision in years to come, a bit like season 18, where it's not thrill a minute, exciting, sell lots of action figures, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It's Rosa Parks, here's a King of England, here's a guy with tea. So I guess it's a difficult era that I think probably needs unpacking. As with Jodie Whittaker, I think she's okay. I would like to have seen her flex her drama chops, because the sort of, you know, dizzy, panicky David Tennant flappy energy is great, but where's the big moment of gravitas where something's at stake, which Tennant could do.
Yeah.
Which Tennant could do. And Capaldi could be, but I haven't seen that. And I don't think that's her fault. I just don't think she's been given any of those big drama moments. So, I mean, maybe they're there in, you know, because I suppose what her Doctor's about are not those big dramatic moments. It's more about the emotional beats and the relationship with Yasmin. Now, you know, for some people, that's going to be a total turnoff. And I can see that if you've been watching a totally different show for 60 years. And for other people, they probably quite like that. As for the rest of the audience, it's diminishingly small at the moment, which is a problem for Doctor Who, you know, as a thing going forward. So what Uncle Russell does in terms of making it great drama, but popular drama. So we'll see.
We will.
So to kind of cure its egg. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I think when it's good, it's quite good, but it's not great.
That's a fair summary, I think. We will be back, some of us, one of us at least, next week for another Castovers podcast, in which we will be in some way previewing in some form of detail that we weren't able to do today for no reason other than we had Gareth on. The following episode, The Power of the Doctor. It's coming, people. The end of the Chris Chibnall era. Thanks to Gareth Cavan and thanks to James McLean. I've been Christian Corley, and you'll find this podcast in all the places that you can find podcasts. So if you want to tell anyone about it, just tell them to look for Castobras. Bye.